Welcome to episode 76 of the Eat for Endurance podcast. My name is Claire Shorenstein, and I am a board-certified sports dietitian and runner based in Santa Cruz, California. Today, my guest is fellow sports dietitian and runner Megan Featherston of Featherstone Nutrition. I've had carb loading on my list of topics for a while now, and I couldn't think of a better dietitian to tackle this one than Megan. She has helped make graham crackers super trendy, and she literally sells a tank top on her website that says Carb Monster on it, so I knew she would be down to chat all things carbs with me for an hour. We spent some time on Megan's background as a clinical turned sports dietitian, as well as on her own journey to becoming a very fast marathoner. And then we dive into all things carb loading, including when you should carb load, how to do it, and troubleshooting some common issues and questions that we see among our athletes. And just a quick note, this episode is not just for runners. I know we are runners, but this applies to my triathletes, my endurance cyclists, whoever you are, anyone doing endurance activities over 90 minutes, this applies to you. I hope you enjoy this one and find it helpful, especially if you're running the New York City Marathon coming up or another endurance event. So without further ado, please enjoy my discussion on carb loading with Megan Featherston. Megan, welcome to the Eat for Endurance podcast. It's so nice to have you on here finally. You are so busy, and I know we tried to get this on the books for a while, so I'm glad I finally caught you.
I love it. We had to, you know, schedule like a month out so that we found some time, but here I am. I'm so happy to be here.
And you just ran a crazy fast marathon in Berlin. Congrats. How are you feeling? How's the body doing?
Thank you. I feel good. I really do. Like, I keep saying, like, can I go run? And like, gotta respect the process, gotta let the body heal, but I'm feeling ready to get back out there and itching to get back into things. Yeah.
I mean, because you're running New York too, right?
Yes. So, and last year I did the Chicago to New York back to back, which was only 4 weeks. And this time Berlin to New York is 6 weeks. So I'm like, oh, I got this, right? Like, that's normal. But
are you really racing it? Is it more of like a fun victory lap? Okay. Just like kind of fun run. Okay. Yeah. Good.
I don't
good
know about stuff. You, but I think New York City is one of the hardest marathon courses, you know? So I am happy to run that easy any day of the week. Yeah. Yep. Versus racing.
I've run it twice. The first time I was trying to BQ, and this was like, oh God, 13 years ago. And it was so brutal. And then the second time I ran it, I was just fun running with my husband, and it was like a massive party. I finished feeling like totally fine. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do that again.
Right. Well, that's what I'm hoping for this year, because last year was when it was so hot. So even though it was 30 minutes slower than my Chicago marathon, I felt terrible at the end because it was so hot, you know? So I'm like, let's have a good day out there this year.
Yeah. And this episode, so we're talking all things carb loading today, and this will be coming out the week before New York, conveniently, so everyone can get their info before, although, I mean, hopefully they have this info well in advance, you know.
You never know.
Cut a little close. Cut a little. I know, right? I mean, let's be real. The people that we've seen, I'm sure, everyone's leaving at the last minute. But let's rewind for a sec. I want to hear a little bit more about Berlin, because that's one race I haven't run, and it went so well for you, and it sounds like it was just a big old party, especially at the end. What little tidbits can you share with us about your experience running that race?
Yeah, I didn't have many expectations for Berlin. I knew it was a fast course, right? We know that Elliot set, you know, the world record for the marathon there, and he was back to try to do it again. So I knew it was a fast course.
You got to meet him too.
Wild.
Pretty epic.
Right. I know. I knew it was, my goal was to try to PR there, right? Like, out of all the races I had on the calendar, I was like, I think that's the one I need to get after and go. But again, it's a 10-hour flight for me from Cleveland. So it was like, I don't know how my body's going to respond to that and the time change. And when I did the math on the time change, I was like, well, basically when you run in the morning anyways, because I'm a very early morning runner. So I was like, yeah, you know, like, this should be okay. But, you know, the biggest thing that, you know, we could talk about today is, when I landed, I had no appetite. So carb loading was like so hard, so much harder than it's ever been in the past, you know. But as far as the course goes, you know, we had one of the race directors give us a little chat, and they said that like wind is never an issue there, which I was like, you're right. You never hear that Berlin was, you know what I mean? Like, you've never heard that. So the way that the course is set up and the buildings are and just kind of the weather there, that, you know, wind is never a factor. So it's a very predictable course, right? It's very flat. We know that. There's a ton of turns. I might have overrun it by a half a mile. But it's just a kind of an easy peasy course, you know, and I got a very laid back vibe from the whole race. You know, in the United States, we have three waves and you can't enter this until this. I mean, there's just mobs of people for Berlin. So if you're not a people person or squeamish around a lot, it might not be your race. I mean, it was just like wall to wall, like a sea of people. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So we pushed real far to the front of our corral so we could hopefully get, you know, up pace pretty quickly. But you know, I thought it was a wonderful race. It was, you know, not incredibly scenic. Every street kind of looked the same. It was like four-story buildings with like mom and pop shops on the bottom, you know? So it's not like there was, until you got to the Brandenburg Bridge, there wasn't like a ton, you know, to look at or anything, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of fast people there. Like, you know, you'd never be alone on the course. Like there's always, you know, people to run with. And it was fun. It was definitely probably number one on my list at this point of like coolest marathons to experience.
Very awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't run that one myself. I lived in London for a number of years. I ran Paris as my first one. And then my husband and I were just in Berlin for a long weekend just for fun. And it happened to coincide with the week before the marathon. And we were kind of running all around and we were training for New York at the time. And so we kind of got to like run.
Yeah.
There was like a park and everyone's mm-hmm. kind of starting to trickle in. So I got a bit of the vibe and it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we're obviously not going to do a full athlete nutrition profile on you. We don't have time for that. But maybe you can give us a little sense of what does like race nutrition look like? What does, you know, everyday Megan, how do you eat? Any like glimpses into your diet and favorite foods and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I think I've single-handedly put graham crackers back on the map.
Yes. I was going to say 100%. It's pretty shocking, actually.
It is. There was just boxes of honey-made graham crackers at the start line of Berlin. Like, they don't even sell graham crackers in Germany. So I'm like, yes, we've infiltrated.
I love it.
So, yeah, I mean, grahams are my pre-run snack. I run very early in the morning. I don't have a whole lot of time. They sit so easy in my stomach. And, you know, I can eat a whole sleeve of graham crackers and it doesn't feel like you ate anything, right? So if we're trying to make sure we're hitting our carbohydrate needs, you know, in a carb load or before a long run when we're a little nervous, it just sits so lovely. So those are definitely a staple for me. I'm also a huge bagel fan. So, you know, definitely my favorite post-run is like a egg sandwich on like an everything bagel, you know, and obviously those are great for carb loading as well. One thing that I'm very open with is I love carbs. I have a lot of trouble with protein. So like, even though this is what I do for a living, it's like every meal I'm like, where's your protein, Megan? You know, that's never my forte. I have to keep it front of mind all the time, trying to find new items that look exciting and I want to add in and are easy and are fast and, you know, kind of go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I have a silly question. If you had to choose between bagels and grams, is it like me asking to choose your favorite child or do you have a favorite?
I'm sorry, it froze. Can you say it again?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. I said if you had to choose between graham crackers and bagels, is it like me asking to choose your favorite child or do you think you can choose?
Oh no, I'd say graham crackers, hands down.
Okay.
Yeah, I do love bagels, awesome. But I think I could live without bagels because I would just eat toast or something. But I don't think I could live without graham crackers. Yeah, that'd be a problem.
It's so funny too, because I mean, and we're going to go into your background as a dietitian in a second, but whenever I think of graham crackers originally, I just think of the clinical setting because in hospitals, and I know you were in clinical for a long time. Mm-hmm. I started out there, but you know, they always have for like, everyone has little packets of graham crackers and I would always be just like roaming the floors. And if I get hungry, I would just like steal a little, the little individual packets of graham crackers.
Yeah. Same.
Totally. All right. And yeah, so let's get into what your background is. You know, I always have my dietitian share a little bit about maybe, you know, how they became a dietitian, how their careers evolved a bit, because a lot of the sports dietitians didn't necessarily start in that space, which was the case for you. And also as an athlete, because again, you're a super fast marathoner, but you weren't always. So maybe you can just give us a little bit of background there.
Yeah. So I actually stumbled on the major of dietetics for those listening that aren't like, what? Oh, diet who? Yeah. It's basically nutrition, right? We just call it dietetics sometimes. I stumbled on it and I was looking through it and it was exercise science and it was like all the science classes that I like, biology, chemistry, you know, and I was like, wait, you can major in this? Like these classes look so exciting to me. I've always been like a perpetual student. Like I love to learn. I've always loved school. So I just got super excited for all these courses and I was like, I'm going to do it. Not really knowing what I would ever do with it at first. And then I realized I come from a very medical background. My mom and my dad are both in medicine. Well, they're retired now. So I was like, wait, I can work in a hospital and do this. Perfect, right? You know, because I always kind of saw myself as either a pediatrician or a nurse for a very long time. So I was like, wait, I like these classes more. This is great. So went through and just loved it, loved the whole class. And then, you know, obviously had to go on and do the internship and decided I wanted to get my master's with it. Because I was like, I don't know enough yet. And again, just love to learn. So I did that and it was very, 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 very clinical. But my master's program, I took a sports nutrition course. And at that point, I had played like high school sports and I was above average. I wasn't phenomenal. It's not like I went on to play in college or anything, but, you know, above average. Always the midfielder, always the runner. Didn't really realize that's why I was getting that position, but, you know, that was what I did. And so I guess just probably my past with playing sports and whatnot really piqued my interest in that sports nutrition class. And it probably helped that the teacher was incredible. I mean, she would give us an assignment and say, there's no right or wrong answer. You just have to back it up with research. So we'd have to write a paper and we were just giving us that autonomy that like, you're not right, you're not wrong. You just have to prove your point. You know, it was really cool for me to kind of embrace sports nutrition from that perspective. So ever since then, I was like, I want to do this. But at that time, I mean, this was 2007. They were, even all my mentors were like, there's not a career in sports nutrition, Megan. Like, there's not a career in this. And I was like, okay, there's not a career in this. I'll just go clinical, you know? So I started my first clinical gig in a neurointensive care unit, feeding people through tubes, like very educational, but so not, you know, where obviously I've landed and needed to go with my career. And I got bored. Like I was bored. I was done with school. I wasn't learning. So I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. So when I was 25, I ran my first marathon. I'd never run a race in my life, not a 5K, nothing, like never pinned a bib to my shirt. And I did okay, right? I finished just under 4 hours. I think I took one gel out there. As I was doing that, I was only training with water, even though I'm a crazy heavy sweater. And all of a sudden afterwards, I was like, there's so much more to this. So I just like dove into the research of sports nutrition. And I was like, okay, you need sodium with your water. Wow, you need to take more carbs when you're running. So I kind of used myself as a guinea pig here for a while and just got just super interested in not only running, but also the nutrition piece behind it. But I actually stayed in clinical for another 8 years after that, 10 years after that. And was just
What was your focus in clinical?
It was NSU, so like neuro stroke.
Got it.
It was less traumatic brain injury and more like stroke and aneurysms and things. And then I did have an education floor for like cardiac, so like post bypass. And then after 5 years of that, I went more into population health at our hospital system. So I was creating like group wellness programs. I created a group weight loss program for our employees. So then I was actually doing the program creation and then I was teaching it. And I think I gained a lot through that. It kind of translated to what I'm doing now. So I did kind of segue out of the clinical, but then I still did have like, if in our employee population, I'd have to call people and educate them on their disease state and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of 75-25 as far as like education and clinical there for the following years.
Yeah. And tell me about like your running career, because again, you shaved off more than an hour, you know, off your time. I'm sure training had part to do with it, but you've spoken about how nutrition was a huge piece. What did that evolution look like in terms of where your race, or maybe it was also everyday nutrition, was before and where it evolved to now?
Yeah. And I would say like, I'm not an elite athlete. I just try real hard. Like if you put something on my plate, I just try real hard to get better at it.
What'd you get, 249 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty darn fast.
I don't even really relate to that number. I'm like, did I do that? How did I do that? Like, that doesn't seem feasible.
You did it, girl.
apparently that's what the time clock said. So as far as nutrition goes, I think, you know, just like most of us growing up, I don't know when you grew up, 90s, early 2000s, like nutrition was more of like something we needed to restrict, something we needed to micromanage, not something we looked at as supportive, at least in a lot of the circles that I ran around in. And so I think that was probably a huge shift, and maybe why I fell so in love with running in the beginning was because it did shift my mindset on nutrition has to be supportive. It's like a piece of being able to do with your body what you want to do with your body, right? You know, mm-hmm. if we're looking at it from something that we can't have, we shouldn't have restriction, you know, I love to see that shift in some runners' minds of looking at like, what can I add to my nutrition to be more supportive of my running? So I would say from a daily nutrition perspective, that's probably what shifted for me the most, was really looking at how can my nutrition support these running goals that I have? Mm-hmm. And then of course, diving into the performance nutrition piece of hydration and fueling and, you know, which continues to evolve. I mean, I learn something new every year about myself and how to help other people. You know, we're just continuing to learn so much about how we need to fuel our endurance performance to really get the most out of our bodies.
Yeah. So what were you reaching for in Berlin? What were the products of choice for that race?
Yeah. So I use Morton gels. And mm-hmm. then I use Scratch Labs hydration. So I'm a nice. Pretty heavy, salty sweater. So I like the higher sodium drink from Scratch. It's never done me wrong. So very loyal to them for my hydration needs. And then I used to have a lot of trouble getting enough gels in. And so I took Chews for a while because I just couldn't find a gel that I liked. And then Morton came out and I'm like, I'm not going to pay that much. I'm not going to, you know, and then I try it and I was like, oh yeah, this is special. This works really well. Like I was able to take a lot more fuel using Morton. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a groupie now. So I'll use their gels and the Scratch. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of these products are crazy expensive, but that's like me crazy. With Spring Energy. I'm like a Spring Energy. I like Morton's good. I like Precision and Spring Energy. Those are kind mm-hmm. of two of my favorites right now. I just got samples from a company called Never Second. I don't know if you've mm-hmm. tried their stuff before. You've tried it. Yeah. I haven't tried it yet, but stoked to test that out. All right. Let's get into carb loading because I only have you for a limited amount of time here. And we have lots to cover. So I think I'm just going to guess from social media observations that carbs are your favorite macronutrient. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I feel like
putting you on the spot.
I feel like I love them all because we know they're important. But I think what you're probably picking up on is people are fearful of carbs. So I think I put a very strong message out there on social media to try to mm-hmm. break the fear and normalize carbohydrates. So yeah, I mean, totally. What you're perceiving is probably exactly what I'm putting out there.
I was saying that a little bit in jest, but yes, that is definitely, it's like, there's a lot mm-hmm. of carb focus. For good reason, though, and mm-hmm. thank goodness, because we need people to consume more carbs, and a lot of people aren't getting enough in, mm-hmm. Athletes in particular. So, you know, today we're not going to be covering anything groundbreaking. Carb loading has been covered so many times. You've covered it yourself in the Fuel for the Soul podcast over many episodes, I saw. But it's a topic that confuses so many people still, mm-hmm. and a lot of people aren't doing it, or they're not doing it correctly, or they're struggling with it. So this is why I thought, hey, let's just spend a whole episode talking about it. Mm-hmm. So let's kick things off with two extremely basic questions. What is carb loading and why do we do it?
So carb loading is intentionally scaling up the amount of carbohydrates we're consuming for 2 to 3 days before our race so that we can optimally stock our glycogen stores. So glycogen is our storage form of carbohydrate in our body. It's in our muscles, it's in our liver, but we specifically want to stock those glycogen stores in our muscles because it's an alternative fuel source for our body so that we don't have to rely on gels for carbohydrates as much. And the reason that we put so much focus on carb loading is because, you know, we can store an infinite amount of fat in our bodies, but we can only store about 12 to 14 miles worth of carbohydrates in our glycogen stores. So if we're out there for 26.2 or even longer for other endurance races, it only makes sense to make sure that those stores are fully stocked so that we have those carbohydrates to help support that higher end performance, which carbs are our preferred fuel source for those higher end PR effort races, regardless of pace. So really just important so that we don't hit the wall, at mile 20, you know, that we can finish our marathon with the strongest mile at the end if we need to, versus really losing pace.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the next question is, you know, when is it appropriate for someone to carb load? Because I think everyone automatically thinks about distance, like, yes, I need to carb load before a marathon, for instance, mm-hmm. But they don't necessarily think about time. Mm-hmm. Like I'm running a half marathon, but I'm running it over 2 hours or, mm-hmm. Or intensity even, like I'm running a really like lower intensity ultra marathon or whatever. So yeah, when is it appropriate to carb load?
So most of the research supports any endurance activity over 90 minutes, we should be carb loading. So I think there's clearly caveats to that. A lot of us may be training for a half marathon that's faster, and I still recommend like at least a day carb load, because we do know that even if we're not out there quite as long, that our muscles actually contract more appropriately if we have some glycogen stores in there. So there's certainly benefits to it for, you know, a half marathon that's faster than 90 minutes, but typically anything over 90 minutes is where the research supports that it can improve that endurance and improve that performance in that event.
And then in terms of intensity, you know, and again, I know you guys got a listener question on this, and I'm repeating it because it's one I hear all the time on, you know, on your show you had this, but what if you're not racing an event? What about that?
Yeah. I think people are always looking for ways out of, do I have to carb load? Right. And ultimately, it's totally your choice whether you carb load or not. Right.
Totally.
But when we look at the type of fuel our body is burning at different intensities, the higher our intensity, the more carbohydrates we're relying on for energy. I always like to put out there, even if we aren't at our full, you know, intensity, we're not racing a marathon, like I will still carb load for New York, even though I'm not racing it, right? Because when we think about it, we're still burning at least 50% carbohydrates when we're running at an easier pace. And most of us are burning significantly more than that over a marathon, even at a quote unquote easier pace, right? Like I think we've got a little distorted as runners of what is easy and what is not. When we really look at the research, like a very slow walk is considered, you know, like most of us are always going to be burning more than 50% carbs out there. So when we think about that, or if we're running slower, we're out there longer. So we need those glycogen stores. Or to your point, somebody who's doing an ultra race that is at quite a low intensity, but if they're out there for 12 hours, of course we want those glycogen stores fully stocked, right? Yes, we're using them more slowly, but we're out there longer. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, let's like lean into this concept a little more, regardless of all like the little finite details.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I have listeners who maybe they're not runners, maybe they're triathletes, or maybe they're endurance cyclists, mm-hmm. or whatever endurance sport they're doing. And this is all the same for everybody, I just want to point out. Mm-hmm. And the other key point, which you kind of made or alluded to, was, you know, no one has to do this. Like, obviously, you can get through, or maybe not if it's a really long event. Let's just assume you can muscle through an event. But if you're interested in performing as, you know, the best that you can and feeling good and not feeling like absolute garbage after, you know, or at least lessening the chances that you're going to feel like garbage, this is why we do it, right? Mm-hmm. So as I often say, it's not about what you can do or can get away with. It's what you should do if you're really interested in investing in yourself. So that's why we're talking about this. And mm-hmm. and things like even, oh, I'm going on a 20-mile hike tomorrow, you know, do it. Okay, maybe you don't need to do like a 3-day carb load, but yes, you should really be thinking about your carbs. So there is nuance in all of this. But, you know, I think we're more specifically talking about like a carb load leading up to like an event setting.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
But you, if for instance, you're not doing an event, but you're doing your own long run race, whatever, or you're doing this really long hike, again, thinking about this is going to be an investment in whatever you're doing. The other point I'd like to just make really quickly about the ultra stuff is even though you're at that lower intensity, you're saying it's long, you also have to think about what if you kind of hit those little bumps in, oh, I'm not feeling well, I'm having trouble taking something in. So it's like preparation. It's like a buffer or insurance, let's say. Carb insurance.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
It's basically carb insurance in case you hit those little bumps in the road later on. So just wanted to make that quick point. So we've answered the what, the why, the when. Let's tackle the how. That's really the big one. And that's where I think a lot of people get confused. So again, the basics, how many carbs are we even talking about here and for how long?
So when you look at the research, typical carb loading research is looking at either a 1 or a 2-day carb load. So a 2-day carb load, we need to eat 12 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram of body weight. What I have found, right?
So
exactly.
Hard.
I have not found one runner that is able to execute that. So I, on my website, recommend 3 days, which is 8 grams per kilogram. And now I've had people reach out that are like, can I carb load for 5 days beforehand? Absolutely. Like, it's not like you have to carb load in a certain amount of days. Like, our body is able, when we are taking in those excess carbohydrates, the first place our body is going to take those excess carbohydrates is to store as glycogen. So if we spread that out even a little bit more, we can. But kind of the sweet spot that I have found seems to be the most realistic for most people to lean into is that 3 days, which is like 8 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight.
Yep, absolutely. And you have a handy carb loading calculator on your site. Which is great. And that's, I mean, I looked at it. It's basically just doing the math for you. It's just like, are you doing 8 grams per kilogram or 10? And then, and it just does it. So it's very simple. You can do the math by yourself. Yeah. You can go to Megan's handy calculator if you don't want to do the math. And does the number of grams of carbs or the number of days change based on an event length? I know that's a question maybe some people might ask.
So we have a finite store of glycogen, right? It's not like if we carb load for more days, we can store more. Like, our storage capacity for glycogen is partly genetic, partly based on muscle mass, and then also training capacity. So the more well-trained we are, the more we can expand our glycogen capacity, but only to so much, right? Like, it's very finite compared to other, you know, fat fuel stores in our body. So I don't necessarily recommend, like, oh, I'm doing a 24-hour event, I need to carb load harder, because there is a ceiling to it, right? No matter how we do it, like, we can only store so much. So you're just going to feel crummy, right? If you try to do it more.
And for a half marathon, but let's say someone is really interested in performance, the recommendation would still be 3 days versus like 1 day, for instance.
So I usually put like a little nuance in there as to like, what is the goal time? So if the goal time's under 90 minutes, I typically only have them carb load 1 day. But if it's longer and we're really looking for performance, right, then 3 days makes perfect sense.
Got it. So maybe you can share your tips and tricks for how to meet these high carb goals. And we're kind of going to get a little bit, we're peeling back layers here. So there's a lot of troubleshooting that we're going to be doing, because I know people have a lot of questions and challenges with it. And I've myself have had my own challenging experiences with carb loads in the past. But just on kind of, again, this kind of top layer as we dig in, you know, maybe it's example meals or snacks strategies when someone figures out, okay, cool, I need 450 grams of carbs per day. How am I going to go about this? What would you say?
Well, I think, you know, in my experience, the people who struggle the most with carb loading are people who are undercarbed throughout their entire training cycle, right? So if somebody, if somebody's race is in 2 weeks and you're listening to this, or maybe it's this weekend in New York City, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, I need to carb load. And you throw your numbers into that calculator and it spits out that you need to eat 500 grams of carbs a day, but that's like a huge stretch for you. We probably shouldn't try to nail that, right? Like, increase as much as you can. You're going to be storing more. But what I would encourage people to do is then to take my next training cycle. I need to reevaluate this, right? Like, I need to start scaling carbs, because I have had some people like, I am so miserable carb loading because the discrepancy between what they're used to carbohydrate and what they need for a full carb load is just too much, right? So sometimes we have to take a step back from this and spend like months playing with our nutrition to be able to adequately carb load. But I mean, most people, let's say that we're eating enough carbs or close to it on a daily basis, this is going to be a scale up of carbohydrates. So something's got to give. So a lot of times I tell people, like, instead of trying to nail your protein at every meal and add healthy fats to every bowl, you know, maybe we focus on increasing our rice, right? Instead of adding all the other things to it so that we have enough space in our body to consume those calories without feeling crummy. Because we know the taper's hard enough, right? I don't never met anyone who's like, can't wait to taper. I feel wonderful. You know, we don't always feel the best. Our mind is spinning in 18 directions. We have phantom injuries and add more carbs to that. And, you know, people are kind of losing their minds at times. So, you know, I always encourage people to stick with the type of carbohydrates that work for them. So like I was just saying, when I went to Berlin, I had no appetite with the jet lag and the time change, and but I can always eat a sleeve of graham crackers. Like, I don't even feel like I ate anything. So I'm like doing the math in my head and I'm like, oh, I guess we're eating a sleeve of graham crackers to get to my goal tonight. Not that graham crackers have to be your thing. For you, maybe it's drinking juice or drinking a higher carb drink. Like the Never Second has C90, Morton has 320, Scratch has high carb. You can get 100 grams of carbs in 10 ounces of liquid if you need to, you know? So I have a lot of people lean into drinking more carbohydrates if they have trouble feeling too full. And then, again, just like some of the foods that sit well with you. I have some people who can eat a lot of white rice, and then other people who can eat more pasta. I personally can eat more bagels. You know, there are certain foods that just go down smoothly for us. So I would encourage you to lean into those, not necessarily what somebody else is doing. And sometimes we practice, right? Like sometimes we practice a 1 day carb load before a 20-mile run so that you know what it feels like. You know, you're more confident, so it's not brand new on race day.
Yeah. And so it's leaning into those things and leaning away from, because we're not adding all this stuff on top of what we're doing. We're leaning away from the proteins, the fats, the vegetables. We're kind of letting go of the quote unquote healthy, you know, balanced plate, as you said. So, you know, so I mean, I definitely have had clients, and I'm sure you too, that they're like, oh my God, I'm not going to have any vegetables. Like, is that okay?
I know.
I'm like, yes, it's okay. It's cool. It's temporary. You're fine. You're going to live.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. What do you think the number one mistake people make with carb loading is, based on your experience?
I would say not paying attention to the types of carbs they're scaling and getting too much fat. I think that's when people are feeling kind of crummy. So when we think about like, I need to eat more carbs, like my mind goes to pretzels, white pasta, white rice, white potato. Some people's minds go to French fries, donuts, cookies, you know, those types of things that are 50%
pizza, ice cream. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
50% carbs. So if we're trying to scale up those carbohydrates and we're scaling up 50% fat, also you are going to feel full. Your stomach's not going to empty as fast. Like, it's not going to feel very good. So a lot of times I try to emphasize, like, let's find those carbohydrates that we can scale easily. That is almost 100% carb, right? So that it's just a little easier for our body to process it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that one. And, you know, just kind of going back to what we were saying before about how many people are often surprised to see how high a number that is. And they're like, oh my God, how am I going to get that in? And and that kind of pointing to, ooh, you probably weren't getting enough in during the training cycle. Maybe we can speak to that just a little bit more about, you know, how an athlete's ability to carb, to take enough carbs in during the training translates into their ability to carb load properly, in terms of, where are you recommend? Like, if people love numbers, for instance, and they're thinking, well, how many carbs do I really need to be taking in during a training cycle so that this isn't a problem? Where, and again, I know this is a very nuanced, individualized thing, but if we had to give some sort of general guidance here, what would that be?
I typically try to start people around like 5 grams of carbs per kilogram of body weight. Again, I base all this on like how many miles per week is this person training, you know, but that's usually like, I very rarely put people below that. And honestly, sometimes I put them above that. So that might be a good start, you know, for anybody listening.
Yeah. And again, just speaking to what we were talking about earlier about how carbs are just this feared thing, you know, I'll give sometimes someone the 5 gram per kilogram number, and it's just like their eyes bulge out. Occasionally I'll start them with 4 only because, like, baby steps from what they're doing, you know, and we'll work up to it.
I agree.
And so I'm always like, hey, FYI, this is too low, but we're going to start here because you're not doing anything. Right. But, yeah. So, I mean, the range, just for listeners, is 5 to 7 grams per kilogram for this kind of, what is it? Moderate. I'm forgetting what the actual wording. Yeah. It's considered moderate. Yeah. I'm like, that's not high. It's moderate.
No. And then every question is, well, what's moderate? Every time I post something on Instagram, well, what's moderate?
So, like, so how would you define that then? How would you define moderate based
on
your client work?
You know, what we're quoting here is literally a position paper on sports nutrition and how to guide clinicians. So we're both speaking from the same table. And what they classify as moderate is like an hour plus per day. So again, it's nuanced. Like, what's the intensity, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's about it. Yeah.
And this is where it gets really tricky. And you know, our conversation, I mean, mostly because I think your focus really is like the road marathoning space. I would say that's kind of one of your niche,
Definitely.
Let's say. And I'm sure there are tons of listeners in that space. And again, I have listeners kind of who are very much in the ultra space, who are in, you know, trail and ultra. Like, I'm moved into trail more, but they're in the triathlon. So, you know, I kind of have people all over. So again, a lot of these things that we're talking about, they're applying to everyone. What we're saying is not just for road marathoners, obviously. These are guidelines, principles that we use for everybody. And I want to make that clear. So yeah, that moderate, I mean, where we run into trouble is like, let's say someone, and I don't know if you work with any ultra folks or, you know, mm-hmm. Ironman triathletes, you do. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah. So, I mean, you see these people who are training for a full Ironman, or they're training for, you know, 50 mile or 100 mile race. Their volume is off the charts, you know, 5 gram per kilogram ain't gonna cut it.
It's a snack. Yeah.
It's a little snack, yeah. Right? So, yeah. And it's hard. And we're not saying any of this is easy, by the way, you know, but it's something that you have to kind of work at. And mm-hmm. really, this is why it takes months, yeah. you know? So this yeah. carb loading thing, yeah. you know, as we're saying, it's not like you're going from, oh, I'm just having a couple servings of rice and like, boom, you're suddenly like stuffing your face with, you know, bagels. Right. Yeah. Like it is a yeah. process. Yeah. So just do keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Let's talk about appetite. So we're, of course, recommending reducing fat, fiber, and protein to make more room for the carbs. What else can people do if they're really struggling to get in? I know you talked about drinking. Mm-hmm. Any other strategies you want to throw out there? Or is that kind of the main one you point to?
Well, and I think it's good to note that it's very common to not have an appetite when you're carb loading. Mm-hmm. Your miles are decreased. You have the stress of travel. If you're an anxious person, that often decreases our appetite. That usually flares as people are tapering. So it's very, very common to have to eat beyond your appetite in order to adequately carb load. So I mm-hmm. talk to a lot of people that have successfully carb loaded, and everybody kind of has a different strategy. Some people, it helps to write down in the notes section of their phone the grams of carb, you know, not that it has to be like crazy meticulously tracked, but some people find a peace of mind to just keep track of like grams or keep track of servings of things, just so that by the end of the day, they're like, yep, did it, check, moving on tomorrow, to have that peace of mind, you know? But then there's other people mm-hmm. who they don't want to do that. Like that's too much, right? So it's kind of understanding like, what are some pieces you need to make sure you're staying on track to mentally be confident mm-hmm. that you're doing what you need to be doing here. So that's obviously a little different than the actual strategy of eating, but I do find that some people find that very helpful to help, you know, to keep up with the carb load and be confident on race day that I did what I need to do here. I highly recommend that we get foods that we are just very used to eating. I have seen people that'll like tag me in their carb load stuff, and it's like a ton of like sugary, like gummy candy. And like, I would feel awful if I had that, because that's not something I typically eat. There's anything wrong with it, but that's just not something I typically eat, you know, like, mm-hmm. and whereas somebody might be like, a box of graham crackers, Megan, I don't normally eat that. Right. So like, I encourage people not to just go like free for all carb load here. Like, yes, I can eat all the carbs I want, you know, and more so take the mindset of what are the carbohydrate foods that I'm very comfortable with that feel good to me that I can scale up the quantity of, and lean into those things a little bit more. But then I always like people to have like some levers they can pull in the background if that food isn't enough. Right. So like mm-hmm. I was just saying, that's the graham crackers for me, or maybe that's some juice for somebody else, or
yep.
those like Bolt House Farm smoothie drinks. I've had a lot of people like lean into things like that. Just make sure there's not a bunch of added fiber in them. Yep. You know, so I think there's lots of ways to do it, but I just really encourage people to stick to the carbs that they are familiar with.
Hello, just a quick break to share a few exciting things that are going on right now. First, I just got the delivery of my Eat for Endurance branded trekker hats made by Boco Gear, and they are amazing. They're made with super high quality performance fabrics, and it's an awesome unisex design. I'm doing free shipping right now for all orders, and for a limited time with every hat purchase, you get one of my 2x4 inch stickers thrown in for free. Head on over to the shop page on my website, eatforendurance.com, to order the hat, or you also can just buy the sticker. All proceeds help support the show, and honestly, I didn't mark them up very much. I also want to share something new that will be coming out in January. I'm really excited about this. It's something that I've been meaning to do for literally years. I'm finally putting together a course called Peak Performance for Endurance Athletes, Your Ultimate Guide to Strategic Fueling. This will be a pre-recorded, self-paced course covering just about everything you want to know about performance nutrition as an endurance athlete. And there will be opportunities to purchase one-off nutrition strategies sessions that are only available to people who buy this course. I never offer one-off sessions like this, and they will be well below my usual one-to-one coaching rates. So if you'd like to be notified when it comes out and to snag a 10% subscriber-only discount, please visit my website again, eatforendurance.com, and sign up for my email list. Lastly, you can support the show in a couple other ways. You can subscribe to the show and rate and review it if you haven't done so already. And if you'd like to throw a few dollars my way,
to my Patreon page. I link to that in my show notes as well as on my Instagram profile. Again, all of this helps keep this free content going. Thanks so much, and let's get back to this episode.
You know, we're always sending the message of like nothing new on race day, practice all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But people don't really necessarily apply it to this situation. Mm-hmm. They kind of just like go a little nuts. And mm-hmm. And so it's an important reminder of like, yes, nothing new here too. Mm-hmm. Like it's right. different. Like you can have like you know, a little bit of gummy worms. I mean, it's one thing if you're just having like a few of something, like it's probably going to be fine. But we're right. talking like, hey, are you eating right. bags of gummy worms and you yeah. don't normally do that? Then yeah, maybe that's not going to end
I mean,
well.
I'll tell you, like the first time I decided I was going to carb load was, oh gosh, it was way before kids. So it was like 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And when I carb loaded, I was like, I was obsessed with Peeps. I could eat a whole package of Peeps for fun any day of the week. Like I just loved Peeps. Like even at our wedding, we had like Peeps that held the name tag in them.
That's hilarious. Because
everybody was like, Megan loves Peeps. I carb loaded on macaroni and cheese and one of those mega size things of Peeps. And it worked fine for me because that was fine. Yeah. Now, if I tried to do that now when I'm not used to it, I don't know that I'd feel so good. But right? Like,
yeah.
if that's something you eat on a normal basis, then by all means, let's do it. But, you know, I just want you to take inventory of like what does work for you right now and just stick with that.
I think one of my first carb loads was for my first marathon, Paris. And I botched that one, man. I had like the worst GI stuff, but like, it was pretty bad. But I think it's because like I bought like a pack of, this is before I was a dietitian and knew better. But like I bought like a whole pack of like whole wheat pita. Because I was like still thinking like, oh, let's get the healthier, you know. That did not end well, my friends. Let me just tell you that.
Yeah.
Whole wheat pita? No. Nope, not a good choice for me.
That's what I noticed in Berlin. A lot of their homemade bread was like very seedy and very grainy. And I'm like, I'll have the white. Yeah. I'll have the white this time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's another important point is like, especially if you're traveling, even if it's domestic travel, but particularly if you're traveling internationally, you know, you might want to be bringing some things with you that you know work, right? You know, like even, I mean, and also like, are you going to be able to cook your food or not? Are you going to restaurants? So you have to kind of research this stuff, at least if you know that you're a little more sensitive. Like some, you know, there's always someone, I've had clients, I'm sure you have too, that they're just like, they can eat anything and they're fine. And I'm like, I wish I were you, but I'm not.
I'm not either.
Yeah. Like I would be on the toilet. But you know, so if you know that about yourself, then let's make sure you have the bagels or, you know, the graham crackers that you brought or whatever it may be, your particular brand of pasta that you like. There are certain things I think you can get anywhere, like white rice is pretty, you know, easy. But yeah, so, you know, I think these are all things we want to keep in mind. We always talk about like logistics, you know, that's a really big one. So keep that in mind with carb loading. All right, let's move on to constipation, other GI issues with carb loading. And again, I know I've personally experienced kind of both ends of this. too much fiber and then having issues going to the bathroom. And I was actually talking with another dietitian friend of mine who, Kelly, I don't know if you know Kelly Pritchett, but we were talking, And we were talking just about how like sometimes it's really challenging with constipation and stuff because, you know, especially the way that we eat, I'm as you know, like we're used to having vegetables and fiber and things in our diet. And suddenly we're kind of removing all of those away. Or that didn't make sense, removing them. And so we were kind of talking about more of a modified carb load and what that might look like. And she was saying how, oh, you know, I know for me personally, what works for me is removing fiber only 24 hours before. So I don't get constipated. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on GI issues, and especially like constipation during a carb load. And I mean, I've seen you post, and again, I don't know the full story about what you're eating, but you eat like a ton of plain bagels. And especially with fiber, the issue is appetite, right? So you can't include so much fiber that you don't have appetite, but we're trying to also make sure you don't, like, we don't want you not pooping for 3 days because that's going to feel horrible. So how do you kind of find the balance? I think this is a really big one for a lot of people. And I know I've struggled with it myself.
Yeah, exactly what Kelly does is typically what I tell people. I'm like, keep your fiber up for 2 days and then just cut it back the day before. You know, maybe 3 days is just too much for you to go low fiber. I've also had some people that know they can always go if they have like a certain juice, right? Like an apple juice or a prune juice. So sometimes I'll have people like add something like that in to make sure. They, plus it's carbs, you know, to stay on top of it. But yeah, I think everybody's a little bit different. Like we have both extremes, right? We have the extreme that like can have no fiber so they don't have GI issues on race day. And then we have the extreme mm-hmm. that's like, if I don't have fiber, I'm not going to go, you know? So it's like, you have to know how your system responds. Like, and
yeah,
I've never met a runner that didn't know which way their system was going to go, right? Like we are very in tune with that.
That's always like, I think it's like, just like that fine line though, because like they're so afraid of having to poop while running, but then they're so afraid that they're not going to poop before they run. So it's like,
this,
how do you make this, it's like threading the needle. How do you make this happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think it goes back to like a lot of practice, right? We have plenty of long runs. Like what do we do? Did it work? Did it not work? Like, yes, of course we want every long run to go flawlessly, but it's actually good to have issues around your long run mm-hmm. so you can troubleshoot them. So you know what to do and what not to do, you know, for race day. So again, obviously if someone is new to this whole concept, you know, they might need to wait till the next training cycle to really get, you know, into all of this. But, you know, I think it just is so important to know your body, how it's going to respond, trial and error things that work for you and don't, and, you know, kind of play around with that.
Yeah. And I think the way I like to think about it too is, because like, again, we have this carb goal that sometimes seems like a lot for people, mm-hmm. right? And then the fiber part of like, I'm so full, I can't get there. So, mm-hmm. you know, number one, it's, as we talked about, kind of setting yourself up for success by making sure you're eating enough carbs throughout the training cycle, number one, right? And then maybe as we're talking about kind of tapering it off a little mm-hmm. bit, like, so day three, maybe you're including a side salad or whatever it is that mm-hmm. you want to include, you know, little fruits, whatever. And then you're kind of just like tapering it off. And the day before, you're really focusing on less fiber and getting the stuff in. And then as you talk about the strategies of, hey, if you know that you have a cup of coffee and that gets you going mm-hmm. or the prune juice or whatever it is. So kind of leaning on those things as well. And maybe those days we're including fiber, you are including a little bit more of the liquid carbs if appetite is a problem and playing around with it. I think all that's a really good strategy.
I think another piece of that mm-hmm. too is that our fluid needs are increased when we're carb loading. So
that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, we need like nice an job. Extra 30 ounces to a liter, which is about 30 ounces, a little more, of fluid every single day. Because when we're storing carbs, it's not just carbs hanging out in our muscle. It's glycogen, which is a gram of carb to 2 or 3 grams of water. So if we don't have enough fluid, 30 ounces extra fluid a day is a lot, you know,
yeah,
for somebody.
Yeah, it's almost a liter. Yeah.
Right. So if we're not doing that, we're more likely to get constipated. So sometimes mm-hmm. I wonder if the constipation piece is just that people aren't staying up with their fluid needs, especially if we're traveling. Like when I was in Berlin, they served water in 6 ounce glasses or like 8 ounce bottles. I was like, I need 10 of these, 20 of yep. these. You know what I mean? I was like, I literally had this aha moment when I was there and I was like, this is why people screw this up. It is so hard, right? To drink enough, to eat enough, like when you're traveling, especially abroad. So, you know, I think we really have to know what we need and really have to be, you know, dedicated to that and advocate for ourselves.
And I think it's even harder in cultures like in Europe, for instance, where like it's not as normal to just like fill up on tap water.
No.
Like, they'll look at you crazy.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you want what? Like, no, here's your expensive bottle of water in a tiny container.
Right.
You know, it's much easier in the States where it's like you're in an airport and they're like little bottle filler things everywhere, you know, versus abroad. Yeah. I always get frustrated with that. Actually on the hydration piece, since we're on it, you know, you've spoken about this, I've spoken about this, but just knowing, expecting that you're gonna be bloated and you're gonna gain weight. What do you want to say on that? Just sending that message out to people.
Yeah. So I have met a small handful of runners who are probably have solid glycogen stores when they're training. Most of us are literally exhausting our glycogen stores, maybe building them halfway up, exhausting them, right? So in training, we typically never have full glycogen stores. It'd be amazing if we did, but most people are not walking around with their glycogen stores full. So we just said that when we store glycogen, we store water with it. So if we do the math behind the scenes of how many grams of carbs we're holding onto and how many grams of water, we could easily be up 2 to 3 pounds if we happen to step on the scale when we're fully carb loaded. And if there's anyone who's aware of their body and how it feels, it's runners, right? We are mm-hmm. very in tune with how we feel our best. So while most Americans might not notice 2 or 3 pounds of fluid retention, runners do. Most runners are very aware of that, right? So I think we need to understand that that's actually a good thing. I always say, if we don't step to the start line of the race feeling a little bit doughy, we didn't do it right. We are not in the place where our body has the fuel that it needs to go, you know, run to the best of our ability, 26.2 miles. So I think it's important to know that we are going to feel a little bit different. Our shorts might feel a little tighter. If we're conscious about that, don't pick the crop top, get a tank top, you know, like just make sure that you're giving your body what it needs. Because at the end of the day, I guess I'm putting priorities in people's minds, but I guess maybe we say like, pick your priority, right? Do you want to look really good out there with chiseled abs, or do you want to be able to run your fastest? And, you know, by the end, you might have those chisels.
Yeah, chiseled I was going to say. Back,
right. But you know what I guess it's just, we need to understand like what's the priority here. If performance is the priority, you're going to feel a little less than your best self on that start line if you're carb loaded. And that's just what we have to do.
You'll get those chiseled abs by the finish photo.
Nice and dehydrated, you know? I mean,
there you go. Yeah. And same for, you know, our triathletes or cyclists or, you know, all those people who are so concerned about power to weight ratio, mm-hmm. right? And they're so fixated on weight. We just have to let it go. We've got to let it go in this moment and just trust that this is going to, I mean, performance at the end of the day is what you're all concerned about.
Right.
Not
and last
weight.
Year.
Why are you concerned about weight? Because you think it matters for performance and it's not everything, as we know. So just focus on what matters.
Yeah, I know. And last summer I was like, I'm going to go do a half Ironman so that I can relate to these people that I'm working with. Right. I did not do
you
a
did
full.
It?
I did half. Yeah. And
I am
a terrible swimmer, but I mean, so for perspective, right? Like marathon's kind of my passion, but the half Ironman, I'm like, this is even more important. Like carb loading for something like a half Ironman and beyond is even mm-hmm. more important than for a marathon. Yeah. And it was, I literally just wanted to be my own guinea pig and I fueled like a boss on the bike to see how that would impact my run. Right. Mm. And I mean, I was just clipping people off left and right on the run. It was unbelievable because if you don't fuel well, if you're not carb loaded, the run is where you're going to face plant, you know, and that's what mm-hmm. most people are doing. So, you know,
survival.
For those people that are out there that are doing more of these longer events, like it's just even more important to do what we're talking about.
I'm so interested in that because this was your first time doing a triathlon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Started at the marathon, started at the Ironman. Why not?
Love it. Love it. Love it. I cannot swim at all. Otherwise, I would totally try triathlon because I, you know, for the same reason, I really like to put myself in the shoes of my clients and know. Like, so that's one thing. I work with a ton of triathletes, but I've never done a triathlon.
Yeah.
I've done a triathlon relay as the runner. That's the closest I've gotten. But I don't know personally what it feels like to go through transition and do all the different sports and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really interesting. I'm sure you have more to say on that. How it was different. Did it go well? Did you feel good about it?
Yeah. I mean, they told me I could go to Worlds, but I was like, nah, I'm done with this. I don't want to do this again. I'm a terrible swimmer.
Really?
I panicked when I hopped in the water. I could not breathe.
Not that
like,
terrible.
This is how people die.
Yeah.
Oh, it was pretty bad. I was in like the bottom 5% for the swim. And then I climbed my way back through the bike and the run.
But you finished at least. I probably wouldn't have even like finished the swim.
I literally.
Which
one
did you do?
This is how people die. Ohio. Yeah. So it was. I jumped into Lake Erie and it had stormed the night before. So at least everybody had said it was like the worst swim they'd ever done. So I was like, okay, maybe that was a piece of it. Probably not. Just that I'm not a good swimmer.
Well, it couldn't be that bad because you got invited to Worlds. So that's pretty cool.
I made up some time on the other disciplines. Let's just put it that way.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Okay. We're wrapping up our carb loading stuff. When you are suggesting that people spread their carbs over more than 3 days, how can they do that? And who would you suggest, like what kind of person would you say, hey, let's do this with?
I'm trying to think the people I have done it with. I mean, people who have just outright been like, there's no way I can do that. I'm like, all right, let's spread it out.
Okay.
You know, and I would say it's fewer than, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
I can think of like a handful of people that I've done that with.
Sure.
And typically, you know, maybe we are just doing like 5 grams of 5 grams of carbs per kilogram body weight, you know, for like 5 days. And just trying to kind of spread it out a little bit more like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, I think the messaging, and this was going to tie into my next question of like, what if you're not, because I've definitely got these clients, I'm sure you have too, of like, they're not a numbers person, mm-hmm. or maybe they have ED history or mm-hmm. it's just triggered, whatever. Mm-hmm. They don't want to count things. They want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go about a carb load when you don't want to count things and you don't want to calculate things.
Mm-hmm.
How are we just saying, hey, can you do a couple more handfuls of this and more handfuls of that? How are you mm-hmm. guiding them? What would you say to those people?
So in the back of my head, I'm figuring out what they need and trying to translate mm-hmm. that in a different message yeah. than grams of carbs, yeah. right? So like a yeah, lot yeah. of times I'll be like, hey, like put your two fists together on your plate. I want a heaping amount of that, of pasta and rice 3 times a day. And I want you having 2 big carb snacks, like a bag of a double serving of pretzels. And then I want you to eat mm-hmm. a banana and toast, you know? So like I'll mm-hmm. give them very tangible. And then yep. if you want to add something else to it, you can. So I kind of try to paint the picture of how much food that looks like for them and then just roll yeah. with that. And like I said, I would say probably the majority of people relate to that more than the yes. actual grams of carbs.
Totally.
I think it's just our minds work that way because we were trained yeah. to make sure yeah. everything was right and, you know, tidy and people getting enough. But yeah, I would say most people probably, you know, relate more to the servings pieces, which is you know, mm-hmm. something that I create plans for people and stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why the infographics are always helpful. Like mm-hmm. a bagel has 50 to 60 grams and right. this has this many grams, you know? So it's, you can be yeah. like, great, cool. I need this and that and this. I can put yeah. it all together. Boom. You mm-hmm. know, the number is like, what does that even mean? Right.
right.
So,
right.
And I think the last question now, you know, kind of, again, this is coming out right for New York. If you are not already at 5 grams per kilogram, or let's just say you're not eating enough carbs. You don't even know what 5 grams per kilogram means, right?
Yeah.
And then you're hearing all this and you're kind of getting a little panicked, like, oh shit, what did I do? Mm-hmm. You're getting a little panicked. What can we say to those people who want to do something, but mm-hmm. maybe the full carb load isn't appropriate?
Well, you're going to be in New York City and their bagels are like equivalent of 2 bagels everywhere else. So go
there you
get
go.
Yourself some New York City bagels. No.
So good. I miss those. So
I would just make sure, like, especially if you're traveling, just make sure that each, you have 3 meals each day and that they're mostly carbohydrates, right? So like, if you can go get a sandwich, get like the real big bread and not a whole lot of toppings in it, you know? Or if you're going out to breakfast, instead of getting an omelet, let's get the pancakes or the waffles, you know, let's lean into just 3 meals a day with solid carbohydrates and then try to have a snack, right? Whether it's a granola bar, pretzels, a banana, have some sort of carbohydrate snack. If you can get 2 in there with your 3 meals, like that's epic, right? So I always say anything more carb-wise that we do that is not normal for us is going to be stored as glycogen. So if anything else, just try to do a little bit more from a carbohydrate standpoint than you normally do. Stay comfortable with the whole process and, you know, you'll be in a better spot than your normal, right? Going into this race.
Exactly. So the messaging is do a bit more than your baseline. Don't start calculating 10 grams per kilo and be like, I'm going to do this carb load correctly. Please don't do that. you're going to feel horrible. But do more than what you normally do. And then next time you mm-hmm. can look into this a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to add to this discussion? You think we covered it all? What do you think?
I think we covered it all. No,
I think we did a good job. I think we covered it. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, New York City Marathon. You must be super excited for that. This is how many times you run this race?
This will just be my second. So I'm hoping it's better weather so that I can enjoy it more this year. It was brutal last year.
Oh, wait. So are you going to all these like big races with ASICS? Is that how you're traveling? Like, I saw you were in Paris or who are you going with?
Paris was ASICS.
Okay.
New York races are New Balance. And
New Balance. That's right.
The majors are Abbott. So I'm in.
So cool.
I'll be in New York with Abbott and New Balance.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. You do a lot of travel as a dietitian.
I do.
That's really
especially
neat.
This
when
year.
When did that all start for you?
This year's been the most travel, hands down.
Yeah.
Like 2023 has been a lot of travel. I had a little bit in the past. Maybe, I don't know, 4 trips a year.
It's
been like 25 already.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you are on the go a lot.
I have a real problem saying no. If somebody puts a good opportunity in front of me, I'm like, yes, definitely. Definitely. What if that's not an opportunity next year? I'm like, we'll do that. We'll figure it out.
I mean, it looks pretty fun. Some of the stuff you're doing. That's awesome. I imagine though, I mean, is it hard with kids and kind of all that stuff, that finding that balance?
I found that 5 nights away in a row is enough. I can't be away. So, you know, going to Berlin, it was a short trip, but I was like, I got to be home, you know, like, especially with kids being young. My mom kind of swoops in and becomes me when I'm gone.
Oh, that's nice.
And they're 2 houses down. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I could I know that I could not travel the way I do without her being so supportive and literally replacing me in a lot of ways, you know, when I'm gone. So it's I'm very, 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 she was very ill last year and we weren't sure she was still going to be here. So I'm very thankful.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Just very thankful for the situation that I'm in and, you know, willing to embrace these opportunities now because you just never know in life, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you, do you have any plans for next year race-wise that you know about, or is you going to take a little break? Yes,
oh,
you
no.
do.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm going to run.
You never take breaks.
Tokyo, yes. I'm hoping there's not a forced
Tokyo?
Break.
Tokyo? Amazing.
And then London, yeah.
Oh, because, okay, because you're partnering with Abbott, of course.
Get the 6 stars. And then I
did
get
so cool.
an email after Berlin about Sydney, now that I'm 40, for the age group, in, and it's on my birthday in September. I'm like, well, yes, I got to do that, too.
Oh, my God.
So we'll see.
I love it. I
haven't
love that for you.
That,
that's so fun.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
That's so exciting. Well, congrats again. Thanks for spending so much time with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I just have some quick bites questions and then I'll let you go. What is your favorite? I mean, actually, what am I talking about? I know the answer to this. Graham crackers, favorite pre-workout meal or snack. Duh.
Yeah, graham crackers.
I'm not going to bother. Yeah. Okay. How about, okay. Favorite post-workout meal or snack. We know you love your shower shakes.
Yes.
What is the meal? Because I don't know if I've seen the meal after the shower shake. What is the meal after the shower shake?
It's a everything bagel with eggs, a little bit of cheese. If I have it, avocado. I love like a good big like break your jaw bagel breakfast sandwich. Yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
So you said you struggle with proteins. Do you? I mean, do you eat all foods? Do you enjoy any other proteins, or why is it a struggle for you?
I don't love meat. Like chicken, turkey, I really do not love it. And I go and
is it like a texture thing, or what do you think it is?
I have no idea. I've been like this my whole life. I'm better with seafood, like tuna, shrimp, salmon. Like I'm a lot better with that. But again, like cooking it, it's just not something that's super fast, super easy. So I do. I rely a lot on dairy. Like I eat a lot of Greek yogurt, a lot of light string cheese. You know,
yeah. No, makes sense. Biggest cooking catastrophe if you've had one.
Oh God, I'm sure I've had a million. I really like the science behind baking and cooking. So like our food science class in undergrad, I thought that was the coolest thing ever, like to understand why things respond the way they do. That being said, I often will like try to make something in the kitchen and I've had tons of flop, like tons of like, this is disgusting. And it's usually some sort of like bread or baked good. And I've just like totally missed the boat. And then you waste the ingredients and your time and it's frustrating. But probably it.
Do you enjoy recipe development? I know you have some recipes on your site. I'm not sure if that's something you do regularly.
I do. Yeah. I did a lot of it before I got busier and I do. I miss it. Like I wish I had the time to do more of it. I do.
Yeah.
I really like that.
What is the most exotic or interesting food that you've ever tried?
Oh gosh. I was a really selective eater as a kid. Like it was bad. It's shocking that I'm a dietitian now. So I'm like, what have I eaten this exotic octopus? That's not that exotic. Yeah, honestly, I don't think like there's, I can't think of anything like totally crazy. Yeah. We've tried fried rattlesnake bites in Arizona as kids. It just tasted like fried coating. I don't think there was really a rattlesnake in it, but supposedly there was.
I don't think I'd want to eat that. Well, that counts.
There you go.
Also interesting, by the way, and exotic, those are all relative terms. So
it's true.
You know,
that's a good point.
You could say something like, I ate shrimp and that was really exotic for me.
For me.
You know,
yeah,
it's all relative, guys.
It's true.
How do you like your eggs cooked?
Cooked to death. There cannot be anything running. They have to be rubbery. Yeah. Like a runny egg yolk. Nope. Not going to do it. They have to be scrambled and dying and rubbery. Yeah.
So you're that person that likes like the hard boiled eggs that you buy in the store that literally are like they would bounce on the floor if you put them on.
Mm-hmm. That's
like bouncy balls.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually never tried that, but I bet they would bounce. Okay, cool. What is your favorite beverage?
Beverage. Sparkling water. I drink unflavored sparkling water all day long.
Nice. What are your comfort foods?
French fries and pizza. For sure. Like after a marathon, I want salty French fries, maybe a burger, probably a burger. And then, pizza always. Yeah.
What'd you have after Berlin? Was that what you had after Berlin?
Wow. Well, I got that phone call. You want to come meet Eliud Kipchoge? And so
that was right after?
I ate a protein bar and a couple more graham crackers, even though I'd eaten so many already. I was like, you just got to get food in. And then we went to a Greek restaurant and had like a family style, just kind of bites of everything after that.
Wait, with Kipchoge?
No. With the other crew. No.
Oh, I was like, that would be amazing.
He didn't join us. Him.
Yeah. No, he was off eating oatmeal somewhere.
He was. Oatmeal.
Probably. Okay. What's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Cookies and cream, like with the Oreos in it.
Yep. Same. I'm with you there.
Is it?
Yeah. And last but not least, top three items of gear that are most essential to your active lifestyle.
Mm. Well, let's see. Specific to running, I'm still just a devout fan of the original Alpha Flies. So we're getting them off of like backdoor side people now at this point, since they don't make them anymore. I mean, those are just, those come in my carry-on. Nobody's taking those from me. I also cannot run without a hat or a headband on because I sweat so much. So hat is probably would be the second one. And then I don't know, it's tough. The next one between my handheld water bottle that I can carry my own scratch. That's a pretty, I always race marathons in tall compression socks because my calves get really cranky. So it's a toss up between the handheld and the sock. I think I'd give up the sock first. Final answer, handheld.
There you go. What, how much sweat do you lose per hour? Like, have you done a fluid loss test recently?
Yeah, I lose like 2 liters an hour in the heat. So like 64 ounces. And I lose 1200 milligrams of sodium per liter. So it's like, I'm a very heavy, salty sweater, which is probably why I got passionate about all this, truthfully.
Yeah. I lose about the same amount of salt per liter, but I'm a very light sweater. Oh. So I'm a little different.
It's hard. It really impacts
performance.
I'm also
like half the size of you. You're so tall, too. I think How tall are you?
I swear, I'm 5'11", and I have very broad shoulders.
Wow.
That's my theory, too, is that like people with more body surface area sweat more. We have to cool more, right? Like I'm not a small, petite female by any means. Yeah. So
what are you drinking per hour to replace? Because like you can't replace those losses.
No.
Obviously. Like are you getting a liter in?
No.
Really?
Maybe 20 ounces. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I just have taught myself to withstand that. I do a lot before and after, like I hyperhydrate.
Can you not tolerate a liter, or are you just, it's just hard to get it in, or what's kind of going on there?
No, I can't tolerate a liter. I haven't found people who are able to tolerate much more than 24 ounces an hour. Yeah.
And even in like an 20. Even in like an ultra, because I have some ultra clients who are easily able to get a liter, but maybe in the marathon, like when you're really gunning it setting, it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's that.
Like I got more on a bike. I think I got a liter an hour on the bike. For the triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But running is a little trickier. Yeah. It's
yeah. Crazy. And this is like, I know this is, we're going off topic here, but I think it's such an important point to make that when you are such a heavy sweater, because we see people are like, oh, we're trying to replace like 75% or, you know, I've given a range of like 50 to 90% because you have to see what we're talking, what are we dealing with here?
Right. And well, and the other thing is like, we know like percent dehydration matters for some people. Like I have a, like that is a lesser percentage of my total body weight because I'm bigger. You know what I mean? Versus like a 100-pound runner,
totally.
two liters would be devastating, whereas I can handle 2 liters, you know? So there's a plus and a minus to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, Megan, so much. Where can everyone find you online? I'm sure everyone already knows you already, but let's shout out your handles and websites and all that good stuff.
FeatherstoneNutrition.com and then also just Featherstone Nutrition at Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Have an amazing time in New York. I hope everyone who's listening to this, who's running a race, got something helpful from today. I'm sure you did. And can't wait to see how it goes for you.
Oh, it's great, Claire. I love talking to another dietitian. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right, that's our show for today. Thank you again, Megan, for chatting with me and chatting all about one of your favorite topics, carbs. Okay, guys, you know what I'm going to ask? If you're enjoying my podcast, you want to keep these episodes coming, the biggest way you can support me is by subscribing to my show, sharing it with others, and rating and reviewing it wherever you get your shows. I really do appreciate the support. And of course, if you would like to support me financially, as you may know, I do not currently have sponsors, so I am doing this all on my own dime. I would really appreciate it. I do have a Patreon page. You can go on over there. There's a link in the show notes and in my bio on Instagram.
and just give a dollar or two or three or five or whatever you feel like doing. It is much, much appreciated. All right, guys, see you next time.